Good morning. Nice of you guys to drop by.
Hello, what have we here?
Coming to you not exactly live from...
Os Iceland Spaceport.
A man who needs no introduction.
I'm trying to reach
Indiana Jim.
He's back
at last.
He's been waiting for you.
I've missed you.
You're shorter than I expected.
I recognized your foul stench when I was brought on board.
You got a lot of guts coming here after what you pulled.
It's a trap!
I got a bad feeling about this.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Everything's perfectly all right now. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you. How are you?
The Star Wars Survival Guide.
Hello again, Star Wars fans. Welcome back to the Star Wars Survival Guide. I am your host, Indiana Jim, and we're doing something a little different with this episode. I was recently inspired or reminded or whatever term you want to use that there is a really good resource in my list of internet friends and Star Wars friends and people I've worked for that I really wanted to take advantage of and see where it goes. Maybe this could be a occasional co-host thing or a permanent co-host thing, but I am joined in this episode by Christopher Walker. Say hello.
Hey there. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, that's good. I'm good. I got to sleep in until noon today, so I'm very happy.
What?
My wife's away on a retreat. So.
Oh, well, good. Yeah. All right. Well, so let me, I'll start off with a little bit of introduction. Chris, you provided the voice of Corin Horn in the Star Wars codename Starkeeper.
Yep.
You also provided, I think, a small voice in the Thesis of Fantasy thing I did a long time ago.
Yep, I did. I did the king or something like that.
Yes, that's what you did.
I don't even remember what the voice was, but I had fun with it.
It was just random king guy. You were Christiana Ellis's father, which was interesting. But so here you are, done some voice acting, and I've had the pleasure of being in a few different productions with your voice across our contacts like Joe Harrison and Andrew Gilbertson. So,
yeah.
And you do a little voice acting in a lot of places, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of it's just kind of Star Wars stuff, but I also have a YouTube channel where I don't do voice acting as the main part of it, but it does come into it. My YouTube channel is more about inspiring creativity through gaming. So I do a lot of sandbox games like Minecraft and Ark Survival Evolved. So it's fun to make little skits and things with those.
Yeah, and I've watched several of them, at least the Star Wars ones and a couple of the Ark Survival ones. And you do a really good job at, I think, making it interesting.
Well, good.
And making it fun. So
I'm glad.
And, yeah, I think, I don't know if we have a little co-inspiration going on here, because I think seeing what you did, I don't know if that inspired me to do the little building Star Wars Minecraft thing. I've done a few of those I just use my PS4 because I don't really have good recording options.
I just PS4's do great.
PlayStation Share, but it works okay.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons, I guess it just kind of, when the subject of Pablo Hidalgo tweeting about the Force and whether or not like Han Solo uses the Force, when I was going through my thoughts on the matter, there was some, I don't know if there was some conversations we had or if I just saw you tweeting about some stuff, and I just went, hey, you know what, Chris would be a good one to get on to talk about the Force and philosophy, and I just thought you would be probably the most interesting voice for me to bring on. Outside of like maybe even Andrew Gilbertson, he would probably be good because he's kind of in this.
Oh yeah, he'd go on and on.
Bent, yeah. So I figured you would be a little more economical. plus, probably have a little more time.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because I know you are recently married, but he is recently now a father of two.
So yes.
His life is a little crazy, but
it is.
Where I wanted to start was just kind of read what Pablo said. And then talk about it, because I feel like there's a lot of speculation that's going kind of beyond what Pablo is saying.
Mm-hmm.
But to recap, here's what he said. He said, a colleague of mine recently stated that everyone has and uses the Force, which raised questions in some, but it's nonetheless true. The Force is life. If you've ever felt a moment of connection with another or your world, you're using it. That's the idea. You can disbelieve in it, but still have it. I'm sure old Ben would attribute Han's amazing piloting and luck to the Force. Han wouldn't. For gamers, note that I think every incarnation of the RPG gave Force points to everyone, regardless of Force sensitivity. One example we would cite is Bruce Lee. In our world, he would be someone more attuned to the Force than most, hence his remarkable abilities. It's not just physical abilities. Those who can sway large numbers of people for good or for bad are tapping into a connectivity. I can see the case made that exceptional minds of all kinds, Einstein, Hawking, Newton, are tapping into a world most can't see. I think people understandably got caught up in the whole midichlorian thing. They thought you must have X number of middies to use the Force. No, the midichlorian prerequisite was to enter the prequel era Jedi Order. It's a rather soulless way to look at potential bi-narrative design. The prequel Jedi have systemized their methods at the expense of spirituality and intuition. They are more order than Jedi. Characters like Jocasta Nu and Ki-Adi Mundi embody that. Others like Dooku, Qui-Gon, and Anakin don't. But there's more to the Force than just the Jedi and the Sith. There's more to potential than midichlorians, just like there's more to genius than grades. All right, so that's the extent of what he said. It was like 16 tweets long. Okay. A lot to chew on there. Now, the first thing that people, the with clickbait headlines these days are just, they drive me crazy. I don't know if it's just a generational thing or what. So number one, a lot of people are saying Pablo is telling us that Han Solo is Force sensitive. Like, he could be a Force user. Chris Walker, I throw it to you. Is that true?
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of nuance in what he's saying, and he's trying to bring it out a little bit there. When he's saying that Han Solo can use the Force, it's more a bit like he's kind of, the Force is using him almost, right?
So, right. Yes.
Yeah, he's just kind of not consciously tapping into it, but because he has, he's connected, he's alive,
right.
The Force flows through him. It's what gives him life in a way.
Ben said it's an energy field created by all living things.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And then we might say that the providence of the Force is the thing that's put him in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. Even though he says there's no mystical energy field controls my destiny, actually it kind of does. And it's kind of, if we could put it in gaming terms, it's almost like a passive talent.
Okay.
It would be, to me, it would be something that it's there, it helps him, and no matter where it's coming from, you know, that. And so a lot of people have got this idea that I think, you know,
it's a binary thing, right?
Right.
Like they get this idea that it's either you are a Force user or you're not, and there's no in between. And I think what we're learning with all this new content coming out is that it's not necessarily a binary choice. There's definitely a spectrum.
Yeah.
You know,
let's not go there.
No, I'm not going way over there. I'm trying to stay away from that because there's a future episode. I know you want to touch on some of the new content and stuff, but
definitely no episodes where I want to touch on politics.
I didn't even have that in mind.
You said not a binary choice. I'm like, what's that sound like?
Oh, you know, Han was just born that way.
You're right. Okay.
Okay. Moving on.
Okay. Back on solid ground here. What has become popular to say is that the prequels changed the nature of Star Wars because it used to be that the dream of Star Wars or the inspiration of Star Wars was that anybody could be a Jedi, that anybody could use the Force. And so that somehow the prequels, because of midichlorians, changed that. But I don't think that's the case because, you know, they said this like, oh, the Force used to be this mystical, spiritual thing. And now it's suddenly, you know, George is just trying to make it hard sci-fi, which I think a lot of people forget the part that from the very beginning, when Luke asks what the Force is, Ben says it's an energy field created by all living things. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a physical, it's an energy field.
Yes.
actually a thing that exists, not just some mystical weird, it's not magic. But you would think that an energy field created by living things must have some sort of biological origin.
If it's, yeah, if it's, well, you just kind of said it did, right? So it's created by all living things.
Right.
Then it's kind of a manifestation of living things. I mean, pretty obvious, but when we talk about philosophy, it's important to state the obvious things. So,
right.
Yeah.
So it stands to reason to me that something physical and biological can also be measurable.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have hormones like testosterone and estrogen, things in your blood like mercury and iron, you know, metals in your blood, bacteria, viruses, those kinds of things are measurable. Signifiable? I don't know if that's a word.
Significant?
Sure.
I don't know. Yeah,
they're identifiable by blood content.
Okay.
So given that people possess differing levels of skill or power, is it necessary that there's a building block of life which governs said level of skill or power?
That's a good question. Is it necessary? I don't know if it's quite necessary, because I want to throw a little bit of a curveball. I'm curious, mm-hmm. When we say that the force is an energy field created by all living things, are we saying that that's all it is? Or is there something more to it? Like, when we talk about, let's say, the Clone Wars Season 6 arc,
mm-hmm.
When Yoda goes to the Force planet, the nexus of the midichlorians, was that planet created by living things, or did that planet create living things? Or, you know, which way does it go? Or does
like
it go
both ways?
Like a
chicken or the egg, kind
of? Yeah. Does it, like, those Force beings that were on that planet, that were representing different emotions, were they manifestations of the collective energies of life in the universe, or are they in some sense directing the creation of life in the universe?
Right, because now we get to the idea of sentience.
Yeah.
I guess. Does the Force mm-hmm. possess sentience?
Right.
And so we see an example of those that you mentioned, those spirit beings, whatever, mm-hmm. and also the father and the son and the daughter on Mortis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Force can be easily paralleled to, like, God or whatever, you know, a supreme being. We might do that. We might say that the Force, because it has providence, because it has a will, that it might be personified.
Mm-hmm. In some sense. I don't know if it actually can be personified, right?
Okay.
I like the Force, this concept really borrows, I think, a lot of ideas from this ancient Christian heresy called Gnosticism.
Uh-huh.
And there's like the world above, which is this kind of ethereal world that's just made of pure energy, and the world below, which is the material world. And the whole purpose of gaining gnosis or secret knowledge is to be able to transition into the world above. Mm. So, you know, crap, I've lost my...
Well, it's very akin to that, isn't it? With the, when you talk about, you know, Yoda teaching Obi-Wan how to commune with Qui-Gon in the, you know, in the netherworld of the Force or whatever. Is it that kind of thing where you sort of, you transcend the physical form into the Force ghosty?
Yeah,
the blue glowy.
The blue glowy, which is eternal life, basically, you know.
Right.
And then with the dark side, you have Palpatine and Vader trying to hang on to physical life, you know,
mm-hmm.
And they think that that's the way to just kind of live forever. But, you know, like with Gnosticism, that's not actually the case. So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot that, I mean, just in preparing for this episode, I was just kind of reading through Wikipedia, and all these terms and things are just popping out at me. Like, I really think, like, George Lucas's notion of the Force is Gnostic in origin. I think he was reading through an encyclopedia one day and thought, "Oh, that's kind of cool. I think I'll name that after. I think I'll call it the Force, and we'll just kind of use this as like a blueprint."
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Okay. That is entirely possible. And I think he probably had enough exposure to different models of philosophical thought that it just kind of, I think it naturally developed, you know, it's like, okay, so let's use an example from my own writing. It's like when I love epic fantasy. Mm-hmm. I've written some, and one of the epics that I'm working on has a bit of magic / mysticism / spiritualism stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of loosely based on my own particular beliefs about that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of loosely based from a Christian perspective, but that's not the driving part of the story. So I think with George, it just kind of became, you know, a matter of convenience. It's like, I need this to happen. Let's kind of loosely explain what this is and how it works and move on with our lives. You know? And I think a lot of it's just kind of distillations of his own thoughts, his own beliefs, just maybe a distillation of all the different philosophical things he's heard, and just kind of, you know, it's just kind of a mishmash of different things.
Right.
I think you could definitely trace a lot of Eastern mysticism in there.
Yes.
Some of the Buddhism, you know, and so it's his way of talking about, you know, something spiritual and higher without getting too detailed in it. But of course, we as nerds, we love to get really down into it and figure out exactly what it is.
Yeah. And of course, George, of course, is one huge nerd as well.
Right.
He really loves, I'm not going to put thoughts into his mind, but, you know, he gives the appearance in these interviews, and especially in interviews I've heard where Dave Filoni's talking about learning about the Force from George.
Yeah.
That while it may have started as like this kind of thing where he's kind of talking about the Force as an energy field created by all living things, and then, you know, just to tell a story, he really started getting into the details. It sounds like probably from what I can tell, the mid-90s onward. I mean, he really started mm-hmm. thinking more about it and started kind of nailing some of this stuff down and kind of creating a whole cosmology around it.
Right.
I mean, how else do you explain the Mortis arc? That's just really weird and strange by any definition, but it makes a certain amount of sense to him. So obviously there's something going on there.
Yeah. Well, and I think what we're going to run into, and I love Dave Filoni, and I love that he's a big Tolkien fan,
mm-hmm.
because some of, you know, there's obviously some mythic components of Star Wars that closely resemble what Tolkien did.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And again, with George, it's just kind of like, you know, it's all part of his general experience. I don't really think he was like trying to parallel specific things on purpose.
Yeah.
He was just like, I like this, I like that, let's throw that in there.
Yeah.
But I think what we're going to get to is eventually we're going to talk about Rebels, and I'd like to kind of save that for a little bit later, because
sure.
I think it gives us a good chance to talk about how Dave has taken over for George.
Mm-hmm.
And so just as a little preview, I think what he's doing with the Bendu is sort of redirecting and kind of correcting some of the stuff that was thrown in there with the Mortis thing. It's like a lot of that was George.
Uh-huh.
And so now I think Dave's going to take his opportunity to kind of clarify things and kind of cement it in canon a little more concretely.
Yeah. I mean, the father, son, and the daughter, I mean, you don't think those are Valar from the Lord of the Rings. They certainly
right.
seem like it. Or in the Gnostic sense, archons, mm-hmm. which are kind of aspects of the creator god.
Right.
But they take on different roles. And some of them even kind of stand in the way of... they present a challenge to attaining the secret knowledge to transition into the light. You know,
I see.
They're like what's the term? Like almost co-actors. And they preside over the material realm. But I mean, that certainly sounds like the father's son, the daughter, and the Bendu. I mean, maybe even Ashla and Bogan if we ever get around to seeing those on screen.
But, right. Yeah, and I wonder if those I don't know that Dave is gonna personify those, but it may be that the son and the daughter already did.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
So okay. Now here's the one thing that drives me nuts, and we'll get back to the part about where people, you know, say that it's always understood before the prequels that anyone could learn to use the Force with enough belief or training, but I don't believe that's the case because, yeah, you know, you've got the, and we don't even have to use midichlorians to back that up. I mean, you just go with what Ben said, and then you look at Yoda's explanations, and even at the end of Return of the Jedi, he says the Force runs strong in your family. Well, there's only one way for something to run strong in a family, and that's through the bloodline.
Right.
So, and that's not to say that you have to be born into the Force, but the Force chooses, I think, who is going to be Force sensitive. The Jedi were not out looking for small children based on, hey, we just need a number of recruits and let's make them believe. You know, it was, we're finding infants who are Force sensitive. It was measurable. And that's another thing that Pablo was saying. It's like, okay, and things that Pablo says, I think we can pretty much take as concrete because he's in the story group. He's been working for Lucasfilm for 15 years.
Right.
He's as steeped in it or more so than all of us. You know, he's written for the RPG. He's been in it for a long time.
Yeah, I think you can take what he says on Twitter, maybe not like gospel, but like an authoritative source.
Yeah,
until another authoritative source changes what he said.
Well, and I don't think there's going to be one. But I don't think, you know, and a lot of people have said, well, the story group, they're in charge. Well, they're not really in charge, because now I've heard people saying, well, is Dave actually a part of the story group? Because if not, he should be. And then I've heard people speculate, well, of course he is part of the story group. It's just a matter of them telling us he is. And I don't think it is, because the story group is really just the keepers. You know, it's like Leland Chi he's the keeper of the holocron. It's just, we have all the knowledge of the facts, and I think they're just there to make sure the story is, okay, here's where it fits, this is where it doesn't. You know, that's all they're there for.
They're not
in charge of the creative process of what comes out.
Right. I mean, they direct it in certain directions, but they do not, as far as I know, my understanding is that they are not presiding over every single detail. They're more of directing things on a thematic and a kind of almost a spiritual sort of level, in the sense that they want the cosmology to be consistent across multiple creative properties.
And I think in Pablo's case, he tries to be as clear as he can be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he took 16 tweets to say what he wanted to say about about this. But I think from his very first tweet, he was misinterpreted. And of everybody course. Goes, oh, see, Han can use the Force. That means anybody can use the Force. And it's like, well, yes, anyone uses the Force as much as the Force is the force of life.
You use the Force to breathe in this cosmology. I mean, it's not like this huge mind-blowing thing. He's just kind of saying it from a different perspective.
It connects us. It binds the galaxy together.
Yeah.
You know, and this idea that anyone can use the Force with enough belief in training or training is wrong, because it's not really a belief system.
Yeah.
And I think,
Sorry, I was just going to ask on another rabbit trail. Do you know where that idea came from originally? Was it like from the comics?
Which idea?
That anybody, if they just try hard enough, they can use the Force and become a Jedi? And
I think it's more just the way the movie inspired us as children.
Uh-huh.
You know, to believe that, oh, we could be a Jedi. You know, it's just kind of that, you know, we all kind of gravitate toward that, being able to move things with our mind and cool swords and, you know, wanting to be the Jedi. It's like that, I think that's where that comes from. I don't think it's, I think it's a claim from people who haven't really delved real deep into Star Wars sometimes.
Okay.
Well, I hesitate to say that. Let me backtrack it. I think there's a lot of people that are well steeped into Star Wars that really wish they could be Jedi that don't want to imagine that, it's, you know, your sensitivity or your ability is based on some cold, hard fact of whether or not you have enough XYZ in your blood.
Mm-hmm.
But if everyone has the Force, then everyone has midichlorians.
That's, yeah.
I would think.
That makes sense. I mean, you've heard the equation of midichlorians to mitochondria.
Yeah, that's, right? I mean, that, yeah, that's my instant, when I first heard the word, it was, that's what I thought of.
Yeah. So there you go.
Just a thing on the cellular level. Now, the bit about Qui-Gon saying, you know, if you listen, you can hear, you know, that the midichlorians are sentient beings, and if you listen closely, you can hear them telling you what the will of the Force is. You know, I don't know. Maybe, because there's a lot of personification. Again, when you look at the, mm-hmm. the Mortis arc, when you look at the Force planet that Yoda went to, I mean, there's that personification of the Force. The Force somehow exerting its will or showing its desire or answering questions or whatever it is. So, you know, we won't really get into much of the, but the Jedi meditate, you know, they meditate to learn things. They meditate mm-hmm. to hear things. And, so anyway, you know, you can just, there's so many places to go with this. You know, when Yoda says, you know, you can see things when Luke is upside down doing his handstand, and he's talking about other places you will see, the future, the past, old friends long gone, you know, this kind of thing, there's got to be something that's revealing that to him.
Yeah,
and I don't think it's just some random just connection with the universe. I mean, maybe that's just kind of what George meant at the time, but you know, anyway, you know, it's like, I don't think George had midichlorians in mind from the beginning.
No. I'm pretty sure that was new with episode one.
That's probably pretty obvious. But here's the question is, can a person without a preponderance of midichlorians use the Force? And I think a key to understanding what Pablo is saying, he said, quote, it's a rather soulless way to look at potential by narrative design. So the phrase narrative design, that's code, right? That's,
yeah,
this is what the writer meant to do.
Right.
And so, you know, he is showing that the Force is in a different light, because that's how the Jedi did things, and the way Jedi did things led to what their downfall was.
Right.
So,
which is just, that blew my mind when Pablo tweeted that, because I hadn't put it together
that it was
narrative design.
Right.
Like when the prequels were coming out, I just kind of assumed, ah, there's old George. He's kind of, you know, giving into the spirit of the age where everything has to be mechanistic and explained and scientific. But apparently.
Or it was just whimsy. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Sounds like fun.
I think the kids are going to love this.
Yeah, it's great.
Let's give Jar Jar Sith powers.
Yeah, maybe we can sell like midichlorian Kool-Aid or something. Maybe they'll learn to use the Force.
Milking midichlorians?
Yeah.
Oh. Ooh. Okay. All right. So, and that's what I think, that's where Pablo's connection to Star Wars and connection to George comes in, is because he has been around George for years.
Yeah.
So when he says by narrative design, you can probably, I mean, that's what he's trying to point out, is that George Lucas did this on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So
we didn't give him enough credit.
Right. Now I wrote something when I wrote out my notes. This dangerous boy, Anakin, was thought to be the fulfillment of prophecy based on the preponderance of midichlorians in his blood. And it's evidentiary for Qui-Gon's assertion that this is a vergence in the Force, or a coming together of sensitivity, biology, and circumstances that could not be simple chance. Now, Mace Windu gives lip service, or maybe it was Yoda, to the idea that the prophecy might have been misread.
Yeah, I think that was Yoda.
Okay, yes. And now I'm hearing his voice in my head. So it's easy to believe that the Jedi went along with training Anakin because he met this arbitrary criteria, and they ultimately handed Anakin to Obi-Wan because that was the system that was in place. So despite the fact that Yoda feared danger in his training, this was the system that was in place.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I think, and when you look at it, when you compare it to the way Luke was trained, he was trained in isolation on Dagobah, whereas Anakin is trained out in the field as this war is heating up, as there's all these, you know, emotional things flying around and anger, fear, aggression. And he's hanging out with all these Jedi who wield the Force as easily as Thor wields Mjolnir.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wondering.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's in the movie. It's Mew Mew.
Oh, is that? I don't know. I've only seen it once.
Oh, you should see it more. It's great.
I don't have it.
Whatever.
Yeah, anyway.
So your thought on Anakin being the reason he was trained badly was because they were systematic with it instead of being organic with it.
Probably to a degree. I hadn't really thought about this aspect of it before.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the fact that Anakin is also apparently still best friends with Palpatine didn't help things.
Yeah.
You know, that guy always continually pulling him to the dark side. Just one little string at a time. I mean, I feel like Anakin was manipulated a lot. I don't think that makes mm-hmm. him a victim per se, but
mm-hmm. Well, he kind of is.
He kind of is, but he also he knew right from wrong, and he knew what he was
right.
doing.
Right.
It just, yeah. I mean, the rigidity of the training, the fact that it was going on in war, the fact that Palpatine. I think all those things were contributing to it for sure. But yeah, the rigidity, I suspect, was probably part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and well, and I think it gives something for Anakin to chafe against, because there's a lot of us, like me personally, I'm not naturally a conformist. you know, I like to push the boundaries, and I like variety, and I like doing things differently, just to do them differently sometimes. But
it creates resentment, right? Which builds up.
Right.
And if you're like Anakin or like me, you tend to hold it in, and then eventually it blows up and you kill kids. I mean, you know, what can you say?
Those poor younglings.
I know.
Now, is Pablo just doing a little PR here and trying to reframe the universe? Because there's speculation based on Rogue One that the planet Jedha is basically its own vergence in the Force. And so you have people like Chirrut Imwe, who may not possess the level of midichlorians, but maybe they still have sensitivity to the Force. Now, here's a guy who, by all appearances, is taking the philosophical following of the Force. So, and now there are certain people come back who say, I knew it. Anyone can use the Force. So, so is Pablo doing a little PR trying to, you know, let's dial back the midichlorians bit to a more sensible place?
Honestly, I think he is just continuing to clarify where, you know, just kind of the narrative as it evolves with this storytelling. I don't think he's like changing what canon was, you know, from what mm-hmm. George thought it was. In many ways, I mean, my interpretation is that Rogue One is born out of, you know, George's writings and philosophy and you know, what he said in previous meetings and story meetings and things on the nature mm-hmm. of the Force.
Yeah.
And so if Rogue One evolves out of that, and you have this character called Chirrut who's kind of using or trying to he's kind of acting Jedi-like, but he doesn't have the Force. You know, he's like Don Juan Quixote or something.
Right, yeah. who also appears in Star Wars Marvels.
Yeah. I mean, well, I mean, come on. He in the trailer, he's kind of a bit like that. He's swinging his bow staff around, but his friend Baze apparently is bailing him out by shooting all those troopers. And so, you know, you get Chirrut like, kicking butt with his bow staff, and then he's like, yeah, I sure showed them. And then Baze is all like, yeah, you did.
I know everything will work out. Yes, yeah. Because I have big gun.
Exactly.
All right, so I think he's riding the fence a little bit, because I think what they want to do is not alienate people who like the prequels, but they also want to appease to the people who hated the insertion of midichlorians. But there's a lot of people who say, oh, yeah, he's making sure that midichlorians are irrelevant, which is dumb because, as we know, everything that happened in the films is canon.
Right.
So what it seems to me is that when you use the things that are said by Obi-Wan and Yoda, even though they make sense when you break it down biologically, it clouds the issue based on this choice Lucas made to show the Jedi having a clinical, soulless evaluation of who is to be trained as a Jedi. And the reason that I think midichlorians cloud the issue, and I think Pablo's trying to restore this sense of wonder and mystery. Because when you have the midichlorians, when you just boil it down to midichlorians, you lose the wonder and you lose the mystery. Which is, I think, something why the Jedi needed to fall was so that Yoda and Obi-Wan would again be exploring the wonder and the mystery of the Force.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like that's what Pablo and probably even the story group are directing here is, you know, the whole narrative design bit about the midichlorians and, you know... Obviously, that's solid. That's from George. But I think they're wanting to bring out and call attention to the fact that it was by narrative design, you know? So.
Yeah, and, you know, it's because, you know, if you're constantly thinking, you know, how many midichlorians does this person have? Who was their father? Is he Supreme Leader Snoke? I mean, you know, it just, you get bogged down in details.
Right, you get Pablo Hidalgo's Twitter feed,
right?
Basically,
and I think it's impossible to enjoy the story when you're thinking about the building blocks too much. That's why when you're a writer, it's like you read stuff and go, "Oh, I see what he did." Oh, yep. When you if you see the bones too much, it's like, "Eh, it's not as fun."
Yeah, it really isn't. Like I decided to go full spoiler, like for one of the Narnia films. And I'm glad I didn't do it on Star Wars. Yeah. I probably would have enjoyed that film a lot more if I didn't know what was coming.
Right.
You know, the changes to the story were a bit of a letdown for me.
Really? So, which one was
it? It was the third one.
Dawn Treader?
Yeah, Dawn Treader. I thought it would have been a little better film.
I've heard bad things about that. I've seen a little bit of it.
Yeah.
But, like, the bit with the swords, when they put the swords in the table and things happen, I really liked that part. That was fun. But
yeah. It's not... Actually, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say it gave me some inspiration for a book I was working on. But,
oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the best adaptation, I think, by any account. Like, you have a random albatross flying around, and it's not clear from the narrative or visually that that's supposed to be Aslan. It's just a random bird that shows up and there's pretty music and then it goes back to the battle scene. And right. Like, what? What is that? Was, if you haven't read the books, you don't know what that is.
Right, that was for the fans, the book fans. Like, oh, I know what that is, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, it's interesting to note, though, before we end here, because I'm going to have to get out of here shortly. When you look at things like the Mortis arc, they, you know, this was overseen by George Lucas. I mean, he was the primary force behind those episodes, but they didn't talk about the midichlorians at all.
Right.
So
yeah,
I think that was
a pure spiritual side of the Force there.
Yeah, and I think that's important to remember that's from George, you know? Now, it was convoluted and strange, but I love it. It's like anytime Star Wars gets convoluted and strange, I think I love it more. I don't know. It's just like I really dig that kind of stuff. It's like, ooh, I don't know what this means, and I don't really need to, you know?
Yeah. It's pretty cool to think about, and future future content does seem to shed a little bit more light on it. Not a lot more, but it lets you, I mean, it kind of opens up a little more light on the subject. Dark side, light side.
See what you did there.
Yeah, but it, I mean, it gives you more excuses to think about it and think about what it means and how the significance plays in to the actual storyline, you know, like with Anakin and how he deals with being the chosen one.
We're going to, I think, delve into this a little more when we look at Rebels and the Bendu, and it's going to be interesting to watch. I think Rebels is going to unfold that a little bit more slowly, probably.
Yeah, I think so too.
You know, they're not obviously doing not a 3-episode arc of Bendu and then we're done. It's going to kind of be sprinkled in and out here and there. And I've only watched the premiere and then the next episode, so I've got a couple to catch up on. But we'll get into Rebels a little more, I think, next time we get together. If you want to leave a comment regarding what we've talked about, you can go to adventuresofindianajim.net, click on the Star Wars Survival Guide, find the post for this episode, and leave a comment. Let's see, you can email the show, survivalguide@adventuresofindianajim.net. Follow me on Twitter @IndianaJim. And Chris, what is your Twitter handle?
My Twitter is SWChrisMC. And if you want to find me on YouTube, which is where I build inspirational things to help you be creative yourself, you can find that at youtube.com/SWChris. And I'd sure love a subscription if you enjoy the content there.
Yeah, do that, definitely. You can find mine too. I'm Indiana Jim pretty much everywhere. I don't do nearly as many, and mine aren't nearly as good as Chris's. Yours are pretty good and really, inspiring. They really are.
I've had some practice at it. So.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I guess that has been that for now. And, just remember what Lando Calrissian always says.
What have we here?
Oh, that one? Okay.
I don't know. What were you?
This deal is getting worse all the time.
Right. Yeah. I'm doing this for free. Right, why? Yeah.
Is that what he always says?
Yeah. That was too close.
This deal is getting worse all the time.